Hey guys, on today's episode, we've got Dan Harrison. Dan is a course creator and business mentor to wellness experts and health professionals growing their coaching practice online. He specializes in authentic selling, relationship-based marketing, and transformational leadership. He founded his current company, the Soulful Sales Company, in 2019 after quitting corporate finance, starting, scaling, and selling his own virtual money coaching practice. Previously, he was a top producing financial advisor for some of the largest asset managers in Canada and has trained hundreds of sales professionals during his 15-year career in finance. After a few years living in Mexico, he has returned to living in Canada with his wife, Kim, and kid, and with a second baby on the way very, very soon. Dan Harrison, really great to have you on the show, man. You're very welcome.
Thank you for having me. Yes. Yeah, I was like, oh, that's an... I haven't heard my intro in a little while. I was like, oh yeah, that is what just happened. We do have a kid on the way. We did just move from Mexico. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
And the timing, you're definitely in the right company here, you know, powerful, proud husbands. And I'm quite sure a lot of them are fathers. That's a second rite of passage for you as a dad and obviously as parents, but how soon is that? It's quite soon. It's just around the corner.
Six weeks. Yeah. March 9th is the day.
Wow. Yeah. Bring it back. We've got two daughters. There's Anya and Elena, but it's Elena is 8 at this point. So it's a few years ago, but yeah, the memories just come flooding back when you think of those, that run in. Totally. And it wasn't in the intro, I spoke about Mexico, but that was really that whole transformation, that change from Mexico back home to Canada. That's another thing that just unfolded in the last couple of weeks, if I remember well, because I'm following your emails.
Yep. Yeah, that happened. We just got here 7 days ago, 8 days ago. So we'd lived in Mexico for about a year and a half while Canada was getting a little bit weird. So we're just like, see ya. And that's one of the benefits of, you know, figuring out how to build a business online, which was nice. So we just went to Canada and then to Mexico. And we, then we got pregnant and was navigating whether or not we were going to have a baby in Mexico or come back to Canada. And ultimately at about 7 months pregnant, we decided, okay, let's go back to Canada. So we did the whole, if you can imagine, my wife, my 3.5-year-old daughter, my pregnant wife, 3.5-year-old daughter, 13, 14 bags of luggage doing an international travel. That was wild, but we're landed, we're here. We have a beautiful home and a beautiful spot in Kelowna, BC, which we love. BC's beautiful. And literally when I came back, I was driving down this, it's like a lakeshore, road, and just had this, I shed a tear. I was driving. It was cold. It was crisp. The lake was beautiful. You got the nature all around. I was just this is home. Mexico was great, but yeah, this feels good.
Yeah. It ends up getting really etched into the DNA. You know, there's a proper, almost genetic thing. It's quite the challenge for myself. I'm Irish. My beautiful queen is Italian, but there just is this honing pigeon in her that's home. You know, home is where the heart is, as they say. So I really do get the emotional journey on that. There's so many places, just listening to the podcast. I connected in with your work first through Dave Wheel's podcast, Men Doing the Work. Advice, guys, check that out. There's so many places to go. I am fascinated to know. I know yourself and your wife, and there's conscious parenting in there. So it's really curious to dig in deeper there. But can you take us back, Dan? I know you've done quite a bit of deep men's work, healing work in your early adult years, etc. But could you give me and the guys listening in just a bit of a background, sort of the formative experiences growing up? What are the key ones that stand out of you in earlier years that carved out the character of the man today?
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. If I put that on a little timeline, I'd say the formative events was, so my parents divorced when I was six. That definitely shaped a large, that was a, you know, big wound, that shaped probably like unconsciously for a lot of years. Shortly after that, like I remember there was I had a nightmare that was basically my entire family dying and wondering like, wait, that's it? Like, we just live this life and then you die. And it like has spurred the, you know, existential questions since like a very young age of like, what is this life? How can this be bedrock reality? Like the way that we see things. Like normal, like upbringing, my mom was great. Where the challenges start to happen and the kind of dark night of the soul, which is like a very long one, seems like. When I was about 20, I went $500,000 into debt, trying to do a land development project. And that basically was a contract. Like that debt kind of symbolized like a contract of doing the work, you could say. So instead of going bankrupt, it was like, I was like, I'm going to figure this out. And that's where I had to constantly like take new levels of ownership, new levels of responsibility, ask the questions like, how did I get into this mess? Just took on so many different programs and self-development courses and work, from Landmark to studying like the Tao Te Ching and A Course of Miracles. And just like a whole myriad of coaches, courses, therapy, to try and unravel that, you know, challenge that I was in. And then through that, inside of that container, it's like dealing with addictions, gambling, debt, money stuff. And that was kind of like the contents of my work. And that contract ended, took about 12 years, really, like from 20 to 32. And in that time, that was kind of the space of doing the work. And then I met my wife 7 years ago now, and she's a Jungian depth psychologist. And so in that way, the conversation never ends. And it's a constant invitation to doing deep work, you know.
That's like, well, I think it's every guy's worst nightmare in one way, but I think it's like the best gift in the world. I think qualification or not, I think this is every guy listening in. I was like, my wife doesn't have qualifications like that, but she comes at me like that anyway. So it's like, your wife is just certified to do it.
yes, it's yeah, it's a beautiful thing, and also like very challenging, because it's like there's no, swiping anything under the rug. it's just like a constant, needing to like be honest, you know, like be very honest. There's no like, oh, that didn't happen, I'm even just thinking last night, it's like, having a conversation. Our daughter just went to school, like it was her first day of school. We're just like having a conversation about what that's like. And she was feeling like sad about this. And then I was going into trying to listen as best I could, trying to recreate as best I could. And then even still, it was like, there was still an energy of like trying to fix or like have my own like thought, and it's like just wasn't the thing. And so like not hearing each other, I like go away, I come back, I'm like, okay, sorry, for my poor recreation skills, you know, let me try that again. It's like but it's just like, it's like that, you know, like there's no, just a constant ownership of like looking at yourself. Which is beautiful and challenging. Yeah.
I'm really curious there, your poor recreation skills, but what are you referring to when you mention recreation skills?
Oh, just like, you know, in that moment, what my wife needed was just to be heard and just to be felt like I understood what she was coming from, or like where the I think she was experiencing probably like mom guilt or like some guilt of some sort. And it was like that, as I was recreating her, like I missed that. Right. So then she felt unheard or alone in the experience. And so but being able to listen well, being able to recreate her without trying to like add my two cents or fix it or like have, or not be in that, like just for the sake of her being heard and met and understood, that's it. And it's like, that's the recreation that I was like, I didn't do that well. Let me try that again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for clarifying. My other curiosity, and I'm always curious about this because I know in the podcast I was listening to you just in preparation for this, like you were talking about failure equals feedback and just like, it's all about feedback. I'm constantly curious, you know, showing up as a husband, how couples that do it well, or, you know, do it their style. How does feedback look between yourself and your wife? Like if you come in, whatever, like you're tired, lacking consciousness, whatever, shit stir, you're caught in your head. How does she land that feedback? What does that look like in your relating together?
Well, could you say that again in maybe just like a little different way?
Is there a set way, like an agreed way, that you receive feedback from your wife? Or is it like hot and heavy, you don't know what way it's coming?
No. Yeah, there's like, I mean, we've been together for like, you know, 7-8 years now. So we have like little tells, like, you know, I don't know. I know when feedback's coming. Like there's like, there's kind of, and she'll ask like if she wants to give like direct feedback, she will do it. And she'll also like ask if now is the right time to do it. So, it could be something like the way that I learned so much from my wife about parenting. And there's a lot of things that I just like, don't know. I'm like, you know, oblivious to that. She will teach me just in the way that we speak to our daughter, or like why primarily around that, like why you might, instead of praising the work that your daughter creates or like with art or something, you might, ask her about the experience or speak to, not about like, wow, great job doing the art, but like focusing in on the specifics where it was like, oh, this looked really challenging. Or what did you feel about when you were doing this? Instead of like praising the work, like being more interested in the human or like her experience, and, to not create such an external validation, like looking for validation in doing, things like that. Then my stuff comes up where it's like, oh, am I not a good dad? And then I don't want to hear it. So then I get defensive. So then it has to be met in a spot like, hey, can I share something with you? Can I share some feedback? And then, you know, and we'll, then she will share it. And in our most kind of conscious times. And then there will be times where, you know, we're just living life, and she's like, oh, let me give you this piece of feedback. Or I might say, hey, remember this time. And that never really goes as well. So, I would say that in our best light, there's a, like a request to give feedback, and we'll like create space to talk about it. And then in our worst, it'll come out in a, just like a unconscious just like not handled with care, and that doesn't really go well.
I think every guy can resonate just when the whole feedback topic, and the fireworks that can be.
Yes,
there's one, like I want to shift in there. It's like, you know, the dark night of your soul, there's such a curiosity about that. You know, a million or half a million in debt, you're 20 or 21 years of age, and you go through all of that processing. What did that show up on your relationship with money? And I just want to pop my hand up on this. My financial wounds, shame wounds on the topic of money and inviting in abundance, et cetera, et cetera. It's like they've been major. Just the last 3-4 years have become so aware how to dominate the thing. So I have a real personal interest in this. Yet the context is like guys listening in, and I imagine you can speak to that as well. So many husbands, I think it repeatedly comes up. It's like the number one, if not the number one, but it's one of the top three reasons for couples to get divorced. It's just like money issues. Yep. So I'm really curious to, yeah, just to hear your journey first and foremost, and then maybe just like tap into your wisdom beyond that. But I'm curious what that dark night was all brought up in your relationship with money.
Yeah. Really interesting. I mean, so much and so many like lessons. I remember my sister asking me, you know, like 10 years into this journey, she's like, if you could go back, would you do that again? And I said, you know, if that was the only way that I could learn the lessons that I now have in my being that I know to be true, then yes, I would. But it was like, I don't wish it on anybody. It was like so hard and such a challenge and a struggle, but that's where the, you know, kind of like the beautiful fruits are, is in those like dark, challenging times. If you lean in, if you do the work, if you're curious, it's like all of that is offering you something, like some healing. And so for me, so much shame, embarrassment, and which leads to like wanting to be alone and wanting to not share and creating like isolation and numbing and addiction. And it was like, all of it was a result of, an underlying shame and embarrassment of like who I am, because my sense of self was so wrapped up and connected to my ability to earn and my whatever my money situation was. So like one of the big things was like being able to separate out the like who I am and my worth as a human and is the disconnection from that. And then money or wealth was like a big piece of work, a big body of work. And then like probably just like a process of being able to be okay, being able to be honest, being able to be vulnerable, like going in and just sharing my cards of like, here's the truth of my finances. Like that was always scary. Sharing with friends, you know, what it was. And that was kind of part of the healing process around money. It's like, you got to be able to talk about it. You got to be able to get honest with yourself. And I remember like when I met my wife, probably in the first week or so, I basically told him like, hey, here's the reality. Like I'm contemplating bankruptcy here. So here's the truth of my financial situation. I don't want to pretend. I don't want to go on like expense. I'd love to take you on expensive dates. And I don't also want to like pretend. So I was just like, here it is. And yeah, I was like shocked because her response was, oh, did you think I was dating you for your money? I didn't know. I was like, I don't know. And, but that was like, yeah, I think that was very healing in itself, like with my wife being able to share honestly and just like, here it is. And then just to be met with like love and acceptance was like, oh, okay. Well, then I could like do stuff with it. Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. And then learning the skills that I learned through that process, like the problem solving skills, the money making skills, the, like sales skills, understanding money and finance by digging in instead of turning my head away from it. I like went into the banks. They gave me a job. I became a certified financial planner. I like learned money and just kept digging in. And so it's like, that's the invitation, I guess, is in the challenges is like, you can run a face away or you can like face it and dig in as more uncomfortable. And that's the, yeah, that's where the work is. That doesn't end. And then it's the same with parenting, or it's the same with your relationships. It's like the challenges are the opportunities.
Yeah. It's like I was reading there recently. It's just this reminder. It was Jordan Peterson just making the point, you know, Jesus and Buddha, and obviously just reflecting, is like everybody the same, but their revolutionary insight was you face the shadow. You just face it. And as men, so often, as you say, you know, like with the addiction, and I put my hand up, both hands up for that, you know, the isolation, we do the opposite. We try to do the opposite. It's like, I'll figure this shit out by myself.
Yep.
And it just does not work. The other thing I hear in that is, you know, the healing nature of just opening up to, well, it wasn't your wife at that time, but the love in your life. Because I know in coaching guys, you know, around the world, is like on this topic, very often the first thing is, you know, have you spoken to your wife about, does she know the full extent of where you're at or where you're not at? And 99% of the time it's like, no, she doesn't have all the cards on the table. And time and time, I don't actually know any time where I've challenged a guy and they've come back a week later. And it's 100% for me. It's like, there's never been one where the wife just, you know, dishes him. It's like there's a sense of relief, they knew it anyway. So yeah, I really feel into that loving nature of our beautiful woman beside, how healing that can be.
Yep, totally.
And in the journey, and I know, speaking on the other podcasts and the work that you're doing, even by the name, the name of your company, the Soulful Sales Company, what I particularly I'm drawn to in your approach, Dan, is how you have mixed spirituality, spiritual values, perspectives, the energetic world in with the topic of finances. Because I know myself, again, it's like, fuck me, that screwed me. I was like this, you know, Buddha wannabe, bodhisattva, doing the spiritual worlds, like I meditate my ass. But it's like, then there's this dirty thing of money, and how do you do it in a high vibrational, compassionate, beautiful way, and invite that in? I'm still on that process, but yeah, just I'm curious as to the origin of your company. Well, the name sort of encapsulates a lot, but what's like the mission and the philosophy and the values? How did that all emerge to come into being?
Yeah, I would say, great question. Thank you. I think that it is a result of a seemingly lifetime of work in two seemingly opposing pursuits or interests that where the work has been to integrate and basically, you know, the question or the quandary is like, if I am a spiritual being, you know, having a human experience, and if I believe, you know, spiritual laws and universal laws and spiritual truths, how does one operate in a world where the laws are man-made and where the we operate on a, there's a different paradigm. There's a different, like, capitalism is an entire way of looking at things. Capitalism is a paradigm. It's a view. And I think at its purest nature, it's like, it can be beautiful. It's like the idea of being able to create something out of nothing and provide value to the world is a beautiful idea. In practice, it gets a little hairy sometimes. But this has been the area of interest. Sometimes I wish I was like just more interested in cars and football. But for whatever reason, and this, you know, journey in this meat suit that I'm in, and the kind of threads that I pull have to do with like, yeah, trying to understand the great teachers of the world and like those truths. It feels like meaningful work to dig into the Bible, to dig into the Tao Te Ching, A Course in Miracles, to understand these deeper truths. And then, but also, you know, if we're living on this planet, like, money is important. It's like, if you want to be able to do the things, and it's just kind of like the rules of the game. And so Soulful Sales was kind of like, if I like looking at money, I studied, you know, finance and learned in doing that, building my own business and learn money-making skills. And the easiest way to, I believe like the one skill set, if you have, this can like change your entire life. And it's a skill that anybody can learn, which is sales. And so when I looked at, you know, all the things I had learned about money, investing, taxes, by the way, if you want to like, know, you don't have to do this, but like the game and the rules of the game are laid out in the tax code. So if you just like, there's a whole set of rules there. And if you learn just a little bit, you can play a different game, you know? And so those are the rules. And if you know the rules, then you can play the game better, right? And so there's that. And then there is a skill set. So doesn't matter like what you're doing, being able to sell something and understanding sales, which is kind of the intersection. If you unpack sales, it's the intersection of being able to communicate clearly. It's the ability to understand people, the psychology of people, and then being able to self-lead and to, be self-reliant. And so at the core of that, communication, psychology, and self-leadership is like the ability to sell. And so that was what I realized, like, if I want to help people truly create wealth and abundance, I'm just going to go all in on that. And then taking that and infusing it with the spiritual truths and the spiritual principles. And I remember like when I was a young, maybe like 10 or 12, this girl would only date me if I became a Christian. So she did the whole flirt and convert thing. And I was in church all the time.
I haven't heard that term before. Yes. Flirt and convert.
The old flirt and convert trick. Yeah. So she got me. But I thought it was great at the time. I was like, oh, this is the answer to, you know, what happens after death. And I'll get a girlfriend out of the deal. Both turned out to be not that simple, but I remember, you know, listening to a pastor, and something about that was very appealing, or like I just found it to be like, wow, what an amazing job that this guy is speaking and sharing golden messages that will just like help all these people, and like speaking into like unpacking the Bible and sharing spiritual lessons and truths. And so I've always like had that, I think, like in my mind, and yeah, like wanting to do that in some way, but not be a pastor, you know? And so this is, yeah. So Soulful Sales Company is kind of like just an authentic expression of a lifelong pursuit of trying to heal my own money wounds and sharing what I've learned along the way and doing it in a way that feels authentic and connected to a deeper truth, which is the soulful nature of ourselves. And then using entrepreneurship as a container to cook the contents of whatever your life is. And that's the container that we create for people, to build their business, but more importantly is to cook the contents that they come into their business with, to like do the work. And in that way, it's a very unique offering that we have. And I love doing it. I love the people in it. And it's fun. Well, fun and challenging.
Fun in the challenge. I share with you now, there's a part in the Be the Husband She Brags About. We have what we call the marriage mastery system, and the one part here is I just really want to speak in is salary. The king creates income in alignment with his values and learns money mastery to keep his family secure and his highest vision on course. I just want to, it's a reminder to guys, I sort of peppered in, just keep the golden thread throughout on the system that's there. In your experience, and I suppose firsthand experience, but then obviously working with hundreds of people around the world, what are, you know, I think a ton of guys get the New Year's resolution, or to have like the breakthrough moment. They know deep down, or not so deep down, I don't fucking like my job. I'm on the, you know, It's the rat race, the treadmill, you know, hamster the treadmill type idea.
Yep.
But there's this perceived chasm between what I'm doing and how do I escape that and how do I do it? And like a lot of the times it's, you know, there can be mortgage, there can be, you know, just kids, a lot of responsibility to go with it.
Yep.
What are some of the main beliefs that self-sabotage people, that keep them caught in a system when if they went with it, they could make it happen? Yeah, yeah. If you could speak to those in your experience.
Yeah. I really like Alex Hormozi. Not sure if you've ever heard of him. He's a big marketing guy. And I heard this from him initially, and I think it's just a great analogy on like, it's applied to business owners and how to kind of like fix bottlenecks in your business. But it, but if you think about like maybe somebody who's working in a job that they don't like that's a bottleneck. Like a, if you have an entrepreneurial mind, you're like, well, that's a bottleneck. That doesn't work, right? So how do I fix that? And Hormozi talks about like, if you were to picture a ladder with like the two railings and the bars up the middle, it's like we have these uneven ladders. And so the two sides, one side would represent skills and the other side would represent traits. And then the bars would represent beliefs. And so what happens is we will typically like develop some skills and we'll like, you know, maybe your skill level is like 7, 8, 9, and then your traits, right? So if you think of like, who would I, in order to make that chasm, you would have to be bold, right? You would have to be courageous. You would have to be, like a leader. There's like traits that you would have in order to make that chasm. And then there's beliefs, right? So your beliefs of like, is that possible? And you might have like a 10 on skills, and you might have like a 7 on the traits, and you might have like a 3 on the beliefs, and like, and then wonder why you can't climb the ladder or like escape. And so there's like a level of a self-awareness that is needed at any given time to know, do I need a skill? Do I need a trait? Or do I need a belief? Like what, which of those three do I need to focus on? Do I need to change in order to get the result that I'm looking to get? And so in order to shift from like your work to being able to like live, like create your own income or like build, you know, like that chasm, I mean, you guess first you're going to kind of chart that path. There's lots of different opportunities there, but then the question you got to ask is like, what's getting in my way? Is it a skill that I need to learn? Is it a belief that I have, or is it a trait that I need to develop in myself? And that ladder can be the bridge between the chasm. Like if you, how am I going to cross this chasm? You got to be able to like understand with some self-awareness of like, which of these three elements do I need to focus on in order to create a ladder that can actually cross that. So yeah, I think it depends for lots of different people, but finding like asking the questions of like, what do I value? You know, what do I, what am I good at? What do I like to do? What is my purpose here? Right? If you think about how much time you spend doing work, like this is what I believe, you know, everybody's here who we kind of like, we came here with a purpose. We came here with a Dharma. So it's like, and you spend so much of your time doing work, you may as well do that as a 2-for-1, right? You may as well do work that's connected with your Dharma so that day in, day out, you're like, you're doing something that's like in alignment for you. And yeah. And then like doing it in stages, right? So I don't necessarily recommend going from like being an employee to trying to be an entrepreneur in one fell swoop, you know, but look for the opportunity. Like, who can I learn from? Is there somebody who's doing what I want to do? And can I work for them? Right? Can I do something that's in more alignment with what I really want and just take like the next step and the next step and do it in phases? One of the things that I did, you know, while struggling with a bunch of debt was just like thinking about sources of income in little kind of components. So I would create one contract over here that would pay for all my bills. And I would create one contract over here that would pay for my lifestyle. And it was like, just like, so you could do one job over here that pays for this and, or, you know, however. So that's, yeah. Does that answer that question? That's kind of like my thoughts on the chasm.
Yeah. I love the analogy. It makes so much sense. I'm literally just placing the ladder across the chasm. So it perfectly works, the skills and the beliefs. There was one thing that came up in the middle of that, and it's a curiosity I had. I think I'm answering it slowly but surely in my own experience. Mm-hmm. But listening, you know, in the last 12, 16, 17 months myself, I've attacked this. The podcast was birthed out of that Dharma, my marriage transformation, parenting, inner work, etc. So super cool. If you want to say the skills to do the job were there, the traits I'd worked on that, but then it was like belief. And one really challenging thing that I came upon, I started listening to billionaires. I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to be driving in the car, you know, why listen to the YouTube videos that they're saying millionaire? Like, just go to fucking billionaires. Like the guys that went there. Some of them, and of course, you know, the biter trait, radically direct, like brutally direct and to the point. Mm-hmm. And I came off quite poorly on some of them. Actually, it was sort of disheartened. I had enough awareness to go, no, fuck that, I'll get a second opinion. Yep. But it was almost like this black and white opinion of you're either an entrepreneur or you're not, sort of like on the traits. You're either bold, you've got it, and you know, this black and white sort of like, you know, 90% of you in here in this room is like, if you listen to what's being said, you're going to quit your business Monday morning. You know, it's like sort of, I'm thinking Dan Pena. I went through a bit of Dan Pena where it's like, what I like is that brutal part.
Yep.
What's your take on that? You know, the trait part where a loving person, sort of they're resonating with you. Mm-hmm. They're spiritually connected. They want to do good in the world. They really want to align, you know, that work, passion, mission with finances.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not yet, you know, they're not that Dan Pena billionaire mindset now. And they're kind and compassionate and they sort of get bruised maybe easily. You know, what's your take on that whole topic? You know, you're either in or you're not. Is that a learnable skill for the major part? Or are there some times where, no, some people, you're just better off not doing it?
Yeah. Okay, cool. I like this. I like this question. We work with, so our primary, you know, the people that we work are literally like the bleeding hearts, you know, like we work with the health and wellness professionals who would do their work for free. They really care about the impact that they're making. And they are those maybe like softer, more compassionate, caring humans. Something like when you look at Dan Pena and the reason that he's wealthy, is because of a skill that he has, which is very important in business, which is really emotional intelligence. So when somebody is like cold like that, it doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't kind, compassionate, loving. But what it does mean is like they've developed the ability to separate out the emotions from the like decision-making, And so like in a very simple example, you look at investing, right? So the people who make a lot of money investing are the ones who can further distinguish or separate the emotions that they're feeling, the anxiety, the fear, the worry, from the decisions that they make, right? And so that's the same thing in entrepreneurship and business. It's like you have to develop a level of emotional intelligence to sit with the emotions and to see like, okay, here's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling anxiety. I'm feeling fear about going and talking to a stranger. I'm feeling anxiety about, and those feelings are valid and they can sit there, but it's not going to stop me from doing the thing that I know I need to do. And so, but that's the skill, which is emotional intelligence. That's really all it is. So I think I look at somebody like Dan Pena, and he's not really my cup of tea, but I do appreciate his like super boldness and directness. And it's like, what allows him to do that is probably like a level, an understanding of like the emotions, and he's not speaking from the emotional part. He's speaking from the, like, you just got to do this, because it's like building a business or creating wealth. It's like, it's just cause and effect. Like, you know, if you do this, this will happen. It's not rocket science. It's simple. And in a lot of ways, it's literally just math. Like if you run a good business and you know, like, numbers and you know how things work, it's literally just math. You want to make this much money, you just need to do this many inputs, right? This many inputs equals that many outputs. And so, but then it's like, we get in our own way, right? And it's like, and our emotions get in our own way. And so it's doing the work, like meditating, you know, leaning in, understanding emotions. You know, I think of my daughter, like, she's got these emotion cards with like 100 different emotions and with like pictures of a face and then an emotion underneath. And you're like, this person's feeling confused. This person is feeling mischievous. This person is like, so she has like a range and a way of identifying like 100 different emotions. I wonder how many humans could do that. Like, adults could do that, you know, yeah. Like, to be able to label the emotion that they're feeling. Yeah. So that's that's the thing. It's that as a skill set is your emotional intelligence will allow you to take action regardless of how you feel.
I love the simplicity of the answer, and I couldn't help but notice, like, wow, you're just after describing the work I do with guys, because that's my process. That's the process with life is once you can detach the emotions, because the emotions are there anyway. I think that's knowing in men's work, there can be this thing. It's like, I want to get rid of the emotions. I want to get rid of the anxiety and the shame. It's like, no. It's just being able to let it sit there.
Yeah.
As you join your wife in deep intimacy sexually, or as you navigate conflict, just have the feeling of rejection there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's super hot. It's super live, but can you just park that and just have it in your body, but not speak from there?
Right.
You know, speak from the connection and allow the rejection be there. Yeah, the rejection wants to tell her fuck off and you're going out the door and all of that, but that's okay. Just put those thoughts on the shelf. So right. It's the exact same thing. And it is that part. And I know you have been deeply impacted. I really love Tao Te Ching and, you know, Buddhist teachings, you know, nature, reality. It really just is the mind again. It always goes back to that. It's like just how your mind, how your nervous system perceives.
Yep.
And if you can just separate that internally, it's really beautiful.
Yep. And something that's been really helpful more recently around that is, and I think you can find this teaching in any spiritual texts. I think they're all kind of like trying to get at the same thing, which is the like, there's a world of illusion that we live in. Delusion probably is a better way. And it's like the delusions of our own mind. And so it's like when you look out into the world, you're seeing it through a distortion, through a distorted lens. And when you start to like realize it, like when you can start to see the distortions of your own mind, the projections of your own mind, that you start to realize, like, wow, this is an entirely made up, like, none of this is even real. None of this is real. It's literally all just my own beliefs, thoughts, projections, like nothing that I see is even real. And like, so then what is real? And this is where that's like, there is a spiritual truth. There is a space within us and then you can get into defining it, but there is a deeper truth that if you can connect into that and you can see through the illusion of, like, you know, all of our projections and the way that we think and the distortions of our experience, and you realize, like, oh, that's all nothing, then there's like such a freedom to actually just like create, because you're like, nothing is as solid as you think it is. So inside of that, you can like oh, I can just change that. I can just create something different. Like, I'll give you one example. It kind of ties back into the belief conversation, right? Like the skills, traits, and beliefs. And the beliefs aren't hard to transform necessarily, and they're always there, but what it takes is like a level of awareness. And so over the last like few months, we've had like I was going away to Maui with my men's group, and we've been meeting every week for 3 years, and it's been awesome to have that container. And then we all met up in person for the first time in Maui. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, I'm going traveling this month, so business will probably be a little bit slower. And I was like, wait, that's a limiting belief. And I caught it, right? And I could see it. And I was like, why is that true? Like, is that true? Because I believed it was true. I was like, that's just how it's going to be. And I caught it. And I was like, that doesn't have to be. That doesn't have to be true. I could make more money while traveling and working less. That could be true as well, right? And then we go and we had one of our best months ever. And that wouldn't have happened had I like been thinking or like seeing things through a different frame, through a different belief, right? And then the same thing happened. We got back on December 5th and I was like, oh, this is going to be a short month. There's only like, you know, basically 11 days. And then I was like, why can't I make more money in 11 days than I did, you know, in the entire last month? And sure enough, we made twice as much money December 5th to the 16th than we did before our previously biggest month, right? And so it was like, how many of these little frames, these little beliefs that if you catch them and you can just like, is that true? You could do Byron Katie's work, like, is that true? Am I sure that that's true? You know, who would I be without that belief? Or what is this? What happens to me with this belief? And it's like, who would I be without that belief? And then you're like, yeah, it doesn't have to be like you can be free to create those. That's as easy as like a belief shift can be, because now it's like you shift the belief in terms of your thinking, you experience it. Now it's mine because I experienced it. So now it's like, I believe this. This is my new belief. So I don't know, that just kind of came to mind for anybody who's like, I know for me, changing beliefs was always like this nebulous thing, like, cause it's like intangible. Like, what are my beliefs? Where are they? But it like doesn't need years of therapy. It doesn't need like a big, long, like a lot of work. It just needs self-awareness and then like a questioning mind.
Yeah. I like that. And as I'm listening to that, what was coming to me, going back to that super cool analogy, like the skill, the belief and the trait, how I have been approaching it. Yeah, definitely men's work. And I've got some coaching on it, you know, but the main part, and I realized, oh man, I've this litany of beliefs. It's like, fuck me, you know, like this poverty mindset from childhood and super cool, brilliant at coaching. And wow, it's amazing. Guys just sit in my presence. And, you know, like within 10 minutes, you know, they're already shifting paradigms. Like, why am I not moving the needle money-wise, like in anywhere near that fullest potential? But what I've done in the last 12 months, there's one thing was just to look at my bookshelf. I think I've mentioned this in some other previous episodes, but when I looked at my bookshelf, I mean, there was a full litany. If you look behind me, like I know the guys listening in, it's audio only. My bookshelf was full of like the Tao Te Ching, Buddhist philosophy, peak performance, is like coaching, trauma release, all the shit that like, that's why my skill set in that arena, like I'm really, really shit hot and get better and better. It's full passion. Totally. Zero books on selling, zero books on marketing, zero books on finance. Hadn't a fucking clue. So I had this awareness of, oh man, these beliefs and the shame. I'm going to be fucking like, there was a point of hopelessness. Like, I'm going to be fucking like years shifting this shit.
Right.
But yet, as I have just went more the skill route, where it's like, okay, I don't have the skills. So how can I have the beliefs if I have zero skills? So just sort of like literally telling myself, like, just shut the fuck up. You know, learn that part of the voice that just wants to say, oh no, money, you're never going to break through. It's like, that's okay. And just got my first book, and it's like, wow, that was very insightful. Good old Rich Dad Poor Dad, started with the classic. Perfect. And then went on, and now it's I don't put the business books down. It's like, yep. I actually have to sort of go, hey, man, you're like, you got to read that like coaching book, because, you know, it's like you have to keep the skills up in that, yep, within reason. But it's there's just such an enthusiasm. Like, there's more, infinitely more enthusiasm. I want to share that to the guys listening in, because I know, like, talking in the zone of margin at, but that's like a real growth edge for me. Still is, mm-hmm, probably will be for years. You know, the whole money, the transfer, I know it's super cool podcast, but like there's a lot of emotions going on with me continually on a daily, mm-hmm, basis, just to keep gifting this out and to keep putting the marketing in that. But yeah, just that sense of possibility, it is there when you just see the delusional part. Yep. There was one spiky bit that came up, because I think like some memory of a me of maybe 6 years ago. I'm probably being kind to myself going that far back, but it was like there was some spiky part of my psyche when you initially said, Dan, you're like, you know, there's this delusional part of reality. For somebody that might be listening in, they're like, yep, yeah, I like it in concept, but that part of my psyche sort of is like, that's fucking easy for you to say, Dan.
Right.
You know, yeah, delusional, you know, the bills, right, on my table aren't fucking delusional. Yeah. They're there. It's in black and white. You know, right. I can do this brand. That's a nice idea.
Yeah.
But it's fucking totally red hot. I do know, like, actually part of your origin story is you've been through the dark night of soul. So you definitely embody this. But for somebody that might be feeling it, you know, it's triggering. There's a curiosity, yeah, there, but man, that feels like a fucking leap. Like, what would you, yeah, say to that guy to, mm-hmm, soften that initial part that just doesn't know how to take a first step?
Right. Yeah. Good.
Million dollar question.
Good call. I mean, I can mostly just share from my own experience. When I first heard that, I was definitely triggered as fuck. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's not true. This guy's bullshit. Like, what do you mean everything is empty and meaningless? Yeah. That was kind of like how it came through. Right. And I didn't really understand what he was getting at. But that was like the angle that he approached it. But it's everywhere. It's like, if you study these books or some of this work, it's like you ultimately get to a point where you can be able to say, like, at the set, okay, look at it from like a quantum field, right? Like at the core of who you are is just a bunch of particles that are literally going into and out of existence. Like, there's nothing there. Like, there's nothing there. And so then, and then if you, that's on like a microscopic level. And then if you think about, like, from the psyche, you think about, you know, okay, so you got bills on the table, right? Sure, you have bills on the table. That's it, though. Like, what typically happens is that then you have all of the stories, and then you have all of the meanings that you make about the bills, about what that means about you, about what you think is possible. And it's like, what happens is there's this conflation that happens between what is actual and then all the stories and the meanings that we make about it, and it conflates on itself. And then you think that becomes the lens that you're looking at life through, and you think that that's true, but all of the stories and the meanings you made up. And so that is what I'm speaking to when I say, like, at the center of everything, there is nothing. It is, it's empty and meaningless, and there is nothing. And then, but it's a challenging thought for sure. But if you can wrap your head around it and you get to a space of like, well, if there is nothing there, what can you do with nothing? What can you do with nothing? Well, you can do anything, right? But if you can't disconnect your thoughts and your stories and your meaning making about whatever the thing is, whether it's the bill, whether it's an illness, whether it's a relationship, whether it's your business or whatever, and you can't disconnect your meanings and the stories that you've made up, then you're stuck inside of that paradigm. But if you can soften it, you can get to a spot of, at the center of everything, there is nothing. Then from that space of nothing, you can literally recreate it all. Mm. But you first have to be able to accept the delusion that you've made, that you're living in. I don't know if that softens it or makes it harder, but.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I'm sort of laughing to myself. First of all, I'm noting, and again, it's on audio to guys, but when you're saying that, there's this look of boldness in your eyes and there's a spark in your face. So I'm loving that energy. It's like, it's definitely a non-intellectual thing that you're saying. What came up for me, and again, it's like it's ultimately, you know, it's the deepest life philosophies, but it's getting back to that relatively simple idea, which you're talking about, like emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. I remember reading, it just came back to me. I haven't thought about this in years, but Eckhart Tolle, you know, Power of Now, A New Earth. Mm-hmm. I remember him talking about very similar thing, and he's very much about like just like the whole story of your path, you know, deep spiritual teachings. And he was making that point where, you know, this person came into him and was like, oh, I've lost all my money. It's all done. It's doomed. I'm going to die. Like, dude, my wife's going to leave me, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it ultimately came down to, you've got $1, you know, 29 cents in your bank account. He's like, well, there's reality. Start from there. Yeah. You know, so like the guy with 10 bills or one major bill, it's like, okay, well, what is it? What is that figure? Okay, start from there.
Yep.
Cut all the fat. It's a bit like, I don't eat meat, but like cut the fat off it. Like, just, you don't want the fat.
Yeah.
What's that prime bit of meat?
What is so? What is honest? What is true? Like, what just is, without all of the meaning making and stories and like delusions, distortions, just like what is? And then from there, then you can change it, then you can build, or then you can grow, or then you can like see things just like as they are. It's kind of like full circle back to like with the finances. I think like built into it, because money has this like this, the cultural context of like, don't talk about money, right? And so there's like a layer of secrecy, but secrecy and shame are very closely linked, you know? So even if you have money or doing well, like they're still usually like, I don't know how, if I'm doing that well, or like, cause it's kind of like a little bit of a secret. So there's always like shame somewhere, usually in finances, in some, you know, cobwebby corner. Yeah. And just like being able to, I've lost my train of thought, but gone. Yeah, some connection there, but
it went so far yeah. into the infinite, you didn't know how to get it back.
Yeah,
totally. Sign of a good conversation. I couldn't help, is like, there again, it's this relationship, your relationship with money. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like a core part of the podcast here, Be the Husband She Brags About, there's going to be like a conflicting relationship with intimacy, with relating with your woman, and there can be that in parenting. So it's really just coming back to the same, you know, with money. If every guy listening in went, okay, my relationship with money, that's quite a central topic. What's my relationship with money? Like, if every guy here listening just went, and the podcast goes, well, what's the black and white of my situation? Mm-hmm. Okay. My marriage, what's the black and white? Mm-hmm. Cut the frills. Emotional intelligence, like all the emotions, oh, there's rejection and feel shame. It's like, no, just cut all that fat off. It's like, what is it? Well, is she still there? Is she probably going to be there when you go home tonight? You know, for vast majority of guys, you know, that's the case. Well, that's a good starting point. You know, there's a good starting point, and just cutting that off. It's such a foundation to take that first empowering step forward.
Yep. I think like another question, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're wondering like, or what's the takeaway, or you know, what questions do I ask? Like another one would be, where am I out of integrity in my finances? Where am I out of integrity with my wife? You know, what haven't I said? What haven't I done that I said I would do? Another question you could ask about money is like, what's my earliest memory of money? Right. What are those early blueprints? Right? You can say the same thing about your relationship. What are your early blueprints for relationships with your own parents? Right. And like bringing some level of awareness to the way that you're relating with your partner, with money. It's like, that's been programmed that way, unless you like shift it or change it or play with the contents, and then you can transform it. But yeah, these are great questions to ask. Where am I out of integrity? What's my earliest memory? Like what's just so, without any like meaning making, like what's the truth of the matter with the finances? What's the truth of the state of my relationship? What's the truth in terms of like how I spend my time? Because those are all connected. Time. Yeah.
What a potent way to leave it here. And I want to honor your time. And it's pure, I speak what you spoke just before, because I just love working with guys that are husbands, that have kids. And, you know, just to speak to the guys coming in, like one thing Dan had said, we were down for a 2-hour call, and it's like, hey, like, and I love the unapologetic part of it. And I've had that for multiple guests on. It's like, hey man, you know, I just have to, like, I have 75 minutes, you know, got to drop my girl to school. And that's it. I speak it because it's just, I fucking love it, because, you know, family first. It's like, just, that's the priority. Business to the side. It doesn't matter. It's like, hey, get your kid to school. So
really? It's the second day of school, which is, yeah, oh, like, man, exciting, and dealing with all of the, yeah, like a big transition. So it's cool to observe and witness that this week with her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is the real juice. The real, you know, as empty and meaningless as life is, like, I don't know, I find a lot of meaning and purpose and joy inside of that little daughter of mine. So yeah, that's the other side.
Yeah, so absolute beauty. Dan, it's been a beautiful conversation. It's a topic, as I say, and I just put it out to guys, you know, unapologetically. I did an episode there, one of my solo episodes that I put there last week, the 9 reasons why women file for divorce first. And it's not scaremongering. I just want to bake that in. It's not scaremongering, but there is just some point in partners being a core part of what Dan has been saying. It's like, you know, with a sober, objective look, just look at the dashboard of your life. But money issues, you know, going unspoken, unhealed, unaddressed, they can become a major, major issue for it. So yeah, there's been potent teachings and insights from you, Dan, on this, and quite a number of guys, I imagine, are deeply curious to know more, and maybe even some of them hopefully taking the next step with you and to find more on your work and the transformation you can bring them on. Where can guys find you online, Dan?
Yeah, soulfulsalescompany.com is where you can find links to all our stuff. Instagram is @TheDanHarrison. And yeah, for any health coaches or healers or practitioners, we have an awesome community. That is, you can find that on our website as well, but it's really engaged, and it's a community to help people build their own businesses, create more impact, fun, freedom. And we give away pretty much everything for free inside there. And so, yeah, if anybody fits that, there's that resource for you as well.
Dan, thank you so much for coming in. Guys, as always, take those 1 or 2 insights, clarities, breakthrough bits of information that shone within your nervous system. You'll know the ones that are going to be most impactful for you. Take them with you and find creative ways to implement them. It's in the implementation, that's where the transformation really lies. And ending with our mantra, the real purpose why we do this: better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazing, beautiful, kingly day. Before you go, guys, a reminder, our brand new live training, Marriage Transformation Heroes 2023, is launching soon. Go from fearing your best will never be enough to being the confident and competent marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Join the waitlist now, link in the podcast description. Joining the waitlist, you will get these amazing benefits: 15% off launch day price. Also, you get front of queue priority access to the only Marriage Transformation Heroes happening in 2023. Join the waitlist now and take your first step towards being the husband she brags about.